AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Wanna be the greatest of all time, yeah. Wanna be the greatest of all time, yeah. Wanna be the greatest of all time, yeah. Hello, hello, hello. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another one, man. This is your boy Ra1, and this is Sparking Conversation. What I do each and every week, y'all, is I get up here and I chop it up with some of the world's most interesting people. And today, I'm going to do the same thing as I do each and every other week, and that's going to bring you a very interesting person. So listen, you know, I wanted to get into this real quick. For those of you guys that download the audio version of this podcast, thank y'all so much. I have to always start the show off with thanks to you guys, because it's very important that, you know, when it comes down to this whole podcast game or content creation in general, more things are so put onto what is being saw, right? Or being seen, rather. Let me just put it to you like that. So with the viral moments, everything that goes viral is something that was visually seen. So whether it was a video, it was a picture, it was something that attached to that particular sense, right? But then whenever you get to the point where people are actually wanting to hear what you have going on or hear the conversations that you have going on, when they're not looking at you, when they're not stimulated by multiple senses, I think that's really dope in order for you. Because whenever we, you know, you get into this game of podcasting, I want to be completely honest with y'all, man. This is not a thing that you do for the glory of becoming like you would think it would be for the biggest podcasters out there. Because for the most part, these guys that are really huge, you know, in podcasting, they've been doing it for a really long time. They've been doing it since its inception. You know, it wasn't just something that they started overnight. And if you ever go back to episode number one, you'll see the growth between whatever you got hooked on them in this particular moment. So let's take Joe Rogan, for example. I know a lot of people, when they get in the game, they aspire to be more like Rogan because they see that there's a, you know, a listenership out here. Because, you know, the people that listen to Rogan listen to other people as well, too. So they know that it's a listenership out there. So people aspire to be more like that. But then, you know, they get burnt out really easily because they try to compete. Because, you know, a lot of people go by this thing that we call ego, right? The image of it is to make it look like we're doing more than what we're actually doing. So if you could be consistent enough to build your audience before you go and start shoving content down their throat, it will always be something, I think, in the background that'll help you out with your longevity in the game. Because some of, you know, you got to think about the value of whatever your platform provides, you know. And here on Sparking Conversation, although I'm not a niche-based platform where we only talk about one thing, we talk about everything, everything that go on in the world that affect people and human beings. Because like I said last podcast and the podcast before that, we can't help that we will all be taught who to look at and how to look at people and to judge them based on what we see. But then the thing that they told us what we see is not really true as well either. So, you know, it's always judged on the character of the person. You know, so often we are being judged by what we look like in all aspects of things, you know. So that's why I feel like, you know, the thought of even knowing that you have a platform and that people would even want to listen to what you're talking about and to the people that you bring on, that's amazing. So double shout out to all my people that download the audio version, and y'all all over the world. So I definitely appreciate y'all. So thank y'all. Now, so before I bring up my guests and all that, y'all know how we do. We gotta give y'all a couple of things, right? Because, you know, I appreciate all the people that contact me throughout the week and they tell me certain things. And they, you know, they want to give ideas about things that should be talked about. And I understand that emotionally people be triggered by things that are going on in the world because they're glued to the news, you know? Yeah, y'all, I'm going to be honest. I'm not the one that, you know, although I voice my opinion on different things, because like I said, it's all about the thought process of what we've been told that we are supposed to do. And it just don't align up to, you know, anyone from any party proving exactly what they're saying they're going to do. And when we talk about who we voting for, and then, you know, when it comes down to that, you know, you got things that go on in the background that people don't pay attention to because all of the hoop lies in the front. But the whole trying to rally people around things based on color, yo, y'all can exclude me from that. I'm not even with all that, yo. You got to be honest. Like, listen, if you can't solely really think about that, you know, there's nobody that's going to come to save us, that you got to save yourself. Once you realize that, and once you realize that there's a tribe of people that feel the same way you do, you guys will put your heads together and you'll create what you need to have in order for you to live. Let's be honest. You know, vote till your eyes turn blue. Be separate if you want to, because that's all it is a means of division, because it just divides people and keep people separate just off of a thought process of what they believe. And it's corny, because at the end of the day, you know, it's only two classes of people when you get to a certain tax bracket, and it's either you wealthy or you poor. They don't care nothing about all that extra stuff that we be out here talking about and being mad about and still holding on to when it comes down to how we're supposed to live. So, you know, pardon me if I don't feel the same enthusiasm as all the other people when it comes down to all of this race baiting. Y'all can miss me with that, yo. I feel like at the end of the day, you know, my platform is not really based on that type of stuff, but if people want to come on and talk about it, like, you know, if you were expert in it, we could do it. I'm not an expert in that. You know what I mean? What we're trying to do is we're trying to provide a platform here where we can get people, like, because one thing about everything that goes on in the world, what most people feel like, they're the only one. They feel like they're the only one. Now, y'all know my guest I had on last week, he's a brave guy. And I don't mean that in a way where it's saying, like, you know, it's not other people out there willing to tell the truth. But the fact that what he talked about involved the children. So, you know, even along the lines of my guest tonight, what, you know, and in the education space, and then all these other things that deal with children in general, you know, I pledge that I hope that from this point on, if not already, that we find more ways that we could protect our children. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, this guy came on last week and he shared a whole bunch of stuff that most people would never even know about. That's not in that world. I mean, infant sexual abuse. Trafficking to the point where it's not where you just been given away to somebody or somebody took you while you was on your way from school. We talking about your family member actually trading you off for the benefit of enjoying other little men. And then the fact of how they choose boys based on, you know, the ego and pride that we're automatically born with, where it makes you go through things and not be told. Or you go through things and you don't feel like you can tell. Like, listen, man, I'm going to be honest. You know, last week's show, it triggered a whole lot of things when it comes down to it. Because, look, in the event that people watch any of the playbacks of the podcast that I've had so far, look, tonight's is episode 95, right? So we've been rolling. And all of the parents that I've had on here, whether they've been dealing with the loss of their child, the abuse that their child has taken by being in the hands of educators and all these other different things, to having people on that, you know, actually went through the personal abuse themselves and been willing to tell it. It just seemed like it's a cycle of abuse happening to kids. And we got to do more at protecting the children, y'all. And that's just my spill on it. Like, I'm not here to be in the space of none of that. I think that when it comes down to whoever a political candidate, why is that not one of the main issues that we're talking about, right? Like, if you kind of think about it, when it comes down to what real issues are, that's a real issue, you know, that there's every other day. I get a post come on my timeline where they're saying, share this kid is missing. Like, you gotta be kidding me, yo. Like, so I don't understand why that's not one of the things that people are screaming to these people out here. Like, yo, put something in play for that. You could put something in play for people who get bothered because of their nails ain't right. You could put something in place to protect children if people get caught with doing things to children. Like, I don't get it. But anyway, we not going to, I guess at this particular point, y'all know how I give it up. If y'all been watching me this long, you know, we not going to sugarcoat it. How we feel is how we feel. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But I do have an amazing guest, right? And I am about to bring her up because that's what the platform is about and that's what the platform is for, right? And we want to just make sure that all of y'all that's listening right now, the ones that's watching, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, please make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button so you'll know whenever we're going live, right? Secondly, the comments are wide open. So, with today's show, if you feel like you want to jump in, if you got a question for the guests and all of that, I actually will display the question on the screen as well as if we need to get into it, if we are in a space where we can answer your question right then and there, then, of course, I'll pass it over to the guests and we'll make sure we get that question answered. So, then make sure that y'all know y'all can join the conversation as well, all right? So, I have Jocelyn Bates in the building. And we're going to chop it up with her. And I'm going to be honest with you. She has the energy that's going to match. And I know that this is going to be a great conversation. So all of you guys that are watching right now, just like I said, make sure that you understand the comments are wide open. And we can make it happen. So how are we doing? Jocelyn, what's going on?
Hello. I feel like that was heavy. That was very heavy. But I appreciate what I feel like I want to go listen to your last episode because I agree in the sense that why isn't it, you know, why are we not worrying about the kids in a larger way? This is very heavy. I have three kids. So I have a 7-year-old and a 13-year-old and an almost 15-year-old. And we homeschool, we unschool. So, like, to me, I would never put them in the education system. I went through it myself. But I think when I went through it in, like, the 90s and the late 80s, it was much different, you know?
Well, it really was. School was much different. Now, you had bullies and all the things that people are dealing with now, but we had a different sense of what it meant to be, you know, like, together. In other words, you know, you had a group of people. If you had friends, you know, your friends kind of really stuck together. You know, you just wasn't out here alone like the kids now. Now the kids are being led off by their phones, by the electronics, by the tablets. You know, they're being led off by themselves. And I think last week's show, it just did a lot to open up a lot of eyes to people because, you know, Yet, for me, I understand that, you know, our job is to protect our children at all costs. Yeah. But then when your children are being violated by the one person they're supposed to trust, you know, oh, man, that just takes it to a whole nother level, you know?
Yeah.
And there are signs. And this guy gave up a lot of that last week. And I'm very appreciative of him being able to tell his story, you know?
Well, I think also teachers are asked of different things than when I was young. Because when I was young, I was like in second grade, my teacher took me out for, like, she brought us to her house for hot chocolate and took us out caroling or something, you know, like back then you could do that. Now there's like I don't think a teacher could do that now and at all. Like, come to my house, you know, I might be wrong. But it's different, you know. So I mean, you know, I never let my kids go to school. It's just I think it's like a it's a lot of indoctrination for me. And when I think back to my school, I'm like, I don't remember anything really. I mean, it's once I learned to read and basic math and basic science, like most of my high school was thinking about boys or, you know, like getting a pack of cigarettes. Like that was where I was in high school. And I don't remember anything. You know, and I have a master's degree. Like, I'm like, I have gone through colleges and done all kinds of stuff. And high school didn't do any of it for me, you know.
I guess that was just the entryway to get into, you know, all the rest of the things that I guess you do remember now. But look, before we get too far, we got to do the right thing. And we have to let you introduce yourself. And we have to also tell the people why you're on the platform this evening.
Yeah. So I am a cultivator of curiosity and creativity in the human experiment. And I am a soul art guide and a human design mentor and an Akashic Records guide and Yoga Nidra guide. And I was an expressive art therapist for many years. And I lived in that world. So I worked with sexual trauma and teenage girls, and I worked with domestic violence and brain injury and spinal cord injury. I worked in the jail system with boys, and like, it was kind of my life for a long time. And then I had kids, and I was like, my girl's never going to date and my son's never going to climb trees. And I was like, I have to stop this work because I'm not going to let them be kids and they need to have those experiences. So I ended up doing a lot of creative like co-ops, and I've always been an artist. So just doing my own work. And then my story is partly about grief. And what happened in 2021 was in September, my parents died 7 days apart and we were living with them. We've lived with them. My kids have always lived with them and we've homeschooled. So like my kids were 24/7 with them, which is a beautiful thing. And I think more people should do it, you know, it was during COVID and it was during COVID protocols and it was during this time when you want to talk about like a loss of humanity, just look back to that. And a lot of people have shut their eyes to it or they didn't experience it the way I experienced it. But my parents died 7 days apart. And in that process, so much unfolded for me, understanding how our world works, how politics work, how protocols and hospitals are tied to pharmaceuticals. I mean, everything came full circle for that with me. Right. And then also the grief itself had, it changed me in a most amazing way. Like I decided to walk hand in hand with it and accept it in my life for the rest of my life. Like I'm going to have that grief. I'm an only child too. So it was like, you know, just pile that on. And I know I'm always going to have it, but I decided to grab it and get curious with it and creative with it. And it's been some of the most amazing transformations in my life. And it's the reason I'm a soul art guide and yoga nidra guide and Akashic Records guide and human design mentor, because I used all of that for myself over the last 3 years. And now I offer it with others because it just comes back to that idea of being curious and creative in your life. If you can tap into those two things together, I feel like there's like a limitless possibility in one's life. So, but I've used grief as that, you know, grief has been my doorway in.
Yeah. Cause sometimes, the way we find our purpose is not always ideal. You know, we may think that, you know, our purpose will come from just the fact of us just wanting one, you know, it's the whole speak the thing into the atmosphere type thing, but then you're going to get it because you did speak it. It's just that how you're going to get it is what you don't know how to ask for. And for some of us, it takes something like that in order for us to actually get in line with where we're supposed to go in life and why we're actually really here. Because, I mean, if you kind of think about it, I think being in service to others is everyone's job. Because in nature, everything is in service to each other. Mm. It's not one thing in nature that don't rely on another thing in nature. We talk about it in all kind of aspects. Think about it. They say God will feed the bird. He's just not going to put the food in the nest. Mm. So we all are remnants of that. We're a part of nature. It's just that we don't look at nature anymore. We've separated ourselves from nature in order for us to really kind of figure it out, because it goes along with what you said when it comes down to grief. You know, learning how to channel that emotion right there is a superpower. Like you, because some people never come back from grief.
Yeah. And I'll add to that piece though of what you were saying, the idea that, you know, we are so out of balance with nature, and you can see it in the medical field. Like you can see how far we've gone down pharmaceuticals when there are simple things that you can do. It's just not instantaneous, which goes back to the whole iPads and kids, right? This whole idea of this instant gratification. And that's so far from nature, you know? And so when you look at grief, what happens when a lot of people have grief? I've been on a lot of grief podcasts talking because I feel it's important to speak the story, because not only do people have to understand that it's okay and it's safe to actually go into grief, the other piece of it is, what if we have another pandemic? Like, are we going to go to this level of inhumanity again? And people need to hear it. They need to hear what happened, right? So like, are we going to go there and just know that this is what can be stripped from you, you know? So like, I've been talking a lot about that recently, you know, this idea that it, you know, telling your story of it, it is safe. It's absolutely safe to go into grief. You do have to set some parameters up for yourself. You know, like I went into like complete shock. I dissociated from everything. I had massive PTSD. And it took me 4 to 5 months just to like remember things, like just to like have memories again. And then once I did, it was like, okay, presence in the body. Cause the first thing I did was like, okay, if I'm not safe in my body, I'm not safe anywhere. Right. Like that's and that's how it started for me. But it is like, we are, you know, the way I've learned is that we are souls, and our souls are in a human body. And so when we're here in this human body, we're here to feel things. Feelings, they guide us. They're symptoms. They're telling us, they're showing us, you know, where to go in life. And we're here to feel it. And if that means it's safe to feel it. We're here to feel it. We came here to feel it. You know, and as we feel it, we learn and we open and we become, you know, even more than we thought we could be, you know?
Right. And that goes back into that purpose thing, because, you know, some people suffer certain types of losses and they're just never the same again, right? Because of the grief. Because of the thought process, you know, just because they think about it over and over again about, you know, whatever cycles. Is not there anymore, right? Versus it being the other way around, as if to say that if we really, really get into the thing about us understanding that we are a spiritual being having a human experience, that energy never dies, it just transfers. And we're all energy. And so many people are afraid to actually accept that concept because they may think that it separates them from God when it's not. Because if you put yourself in a position, they say that exactly when the sperm hits the egg and it actually gets in there and does what it's supposed to do, that it's a spark that happens. It's light that happens right there at that thing. And they've always measured it. And there's so many studies out here where people can go fact check me if you want to, right? And go out there and figure it out. But that's just, it's been scientifically proven that that happens. So we all are here for a reason. We just don't know it until it is revealed to you. And then once it's revealed to you, then it's like, what are you going to do with it? Because some people's purpose, they are under a bridge right now. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Some people's purpose got derailed because of a choice they had to make for their way of living.
Yeah.
Gotcha, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, and so the other thing is, we're in a society right now where people are afraid to feel. They're just afraid, you know, and there's a lot of drugs out there that can help you with not feeling. Right. You can get it prescribed to you very easily, you know, and there's a lot. So a lot of people who go through grief end up on antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, or if you're having a hard time in life and transitioning, you're given something. And then It's almost like you know when there's a caterpillar who has to become a butterfly, right? It is right. Not a peaceful. Have you ever seen a caterpillar turn into a butterfly? Have you ever seen the transition?
Yeah.
It is not nice. There is like squeezing that happens because the wings have to be squeezed and dry. It is a painful process, but look what comes from it. But when you're taking like all of these things in your system, right? You're not actually in the process, and I'm not saying that there's not a place for that. Because I absolutely believe that there's a place for medications if you are going through something, but it's very rare that I see. I was a therapist for many years. It's very rare that I see a therapist be like, "Okay, you're having a hard time right now. Let's give you this for 3 weeks, and while you're on it, let's work on balancing your nervous system and giving you actually tools so we can get you off it in 3 weeks." That's not how it's used. You know, that's how it should be used, but it's not how it's used. And people are on these things for years. And they're not, and then they're like their relationship with their body becomes further and further and further, right? And we just continue going on the path. So no matter if it's grief or depression or life transition, you know, it's like these things we go through. You have to push through the shell, you know, from the caterpillar you have to push through the cocoon, right? You have to move and do that, or else your wings are going to be wet, right? When your butterfly comes out, the wings are going to be too wet to fly. You know, there's things that we have to go through, and we're so afraid of pain, and we're so afraid of feeling these things. And I'm not sure where it started or where it came from. I wouldn't even be able to give you an answer on that, but I know I see it. I see it a lot. And that's why I think learning in my grief, like that it's okay to feel, we're here to feel, you know, and again, you have to have a safe place. Like you have to have a safe place in your, you have to find either a balanced nervous system, like your inner sanctuary, your inner refuge. Some people find it in religion. Some people find it in like their daily routine, right? Something that they can jump back to if something's going on, EFT, their therapist's office, right? But having that one place that, you know, you have safety is an important piece of it. You know, I totally might have gone off our conversation there.
Well, no, not necessarily. No, because it all ties in because depending on what caused the grief, right? Because there's always levels of things in people's lives that throw them into a loop. You know, where some people couldn't deal with things, there's others who would be like, "Oh, that's it. I wish that was my problem." But then you got some. But no one's problem is bigger than the other. It's just been given to them, right? Yeah. So if you kind of think about that, depending on the reason behind the grief, if it's the loss of a loved one, which type of loved one? Is it your parents? Is it your children? Is it your brother, sister? Is it your favorite aunt? Is it your uncle? You know, like whatever it is that your life had, however you grew in life and whatever these people mean to you, depending on that particular thing, it causes people to think a certain thing, right? Because then you got those parents who have lost a child at, you know, really young, like throughout birth, they never had a chance to see the child grow at all. But then you got those whose child grew only old enough to become a young adult, but not old enough to produce. And then this is this parent's only child, and then boom, now they're not here no more.
Yeah.
So then now it depends on the grief. And then you got those who will take that, internalize it, use that as a means to help other people dealing with the same thing while at the same time fighting for justice. Or some people that use a certain type of grief where the thought of what is going on and what happened to the person that they may have lost or the thing that they have lost, it's too much for them to bear because it's the thought.
Yeah.
Right? And emotions is one of the things that control everybody. Like, most people would spend more time trying to be emotionally intelligent would be people having to really force themselves to look at the glass half full at all times.
Yeah.
Right? Because looking at the glass half full also forces you to have responsibility because it goes back to the medicine thing. You know, you could go through something and you can go talk to somebody and in that talking, someone can give you medicine. They can prescribe it to you. Mm. Or you could go talk to your friend in the street and then they'll give you something that they take that you don't know what's going on. Either way it goes, depending on who you talk to, can persuade you to go a certain way, where if the grief is what you're really going through and what you're dealing with, then, you know, being that vulnerable to any type of spirit that's around you. Because let's be honest, a lot of this stuff is spiritual. You know, these things are not just, you know, because they're physical things that don't come with an attachment to a spirit. It's all a spirit. Even grief is a spirit. Can you imagine how many things are allowed to come into a person's body dealing with grief that causes them to act off an impulse? Mm. What you were going to say?
No, I was going to say it's interesting because I often think about grief as this really, really lonely place. Like, I feel like it might be the loneliest emotion that we all have. Like, at least from my experience, it might be the very loneliest thing. Because you could have 9 people that are all siblings with the same set of parents, and each of them is going to have a different set of parents. They're going to have been different to each of them. So everybody is grieving their own relationship with whoever they lose, right? Or whatever you're losing in your life. And yet at the same time, and it harkens back to something you said earlier, the same time, the experience of grief is universal. There is not one soul getting off this planet without experiencing grief. I experience it for wars in other countries. Like, I, you know, just how you started this episode, talking about the previous episode, that's grief. Like, understanding that that's happening. We all experience grief to some level, and we are going to continue experiencing it. Imagine people who are like in their 90s who have lost many people in their lives like that, right? I mean, I'm 47. I've lost more friends than I could count on my hands and my fingers and my toes. I've had a stillbirth. I've lost my parents. Like, I've had it, like, and I'm only 47, right? So it's like the grief continues, but it's also this universal thing. And a reason when we were first talking, you were saying something about like, yeah, to serve, like each of us to serve. Yeah. And I was thinking when you had said that, and sometimes to serve everyone is to also serve yourself, because it's like we are all one. And that experience of grief is all one. And so when you work through your grief, like as I work through my grief, I feel like I am also putting out my medicine into the world, even though it feels very personal in my grief. Like it kind of echoes through in a lot of ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense, because like I said, when a person is going through something in the moment, it's very seldom that they can see that it would be somebody else around going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing, right? Because what's the first thing that people say that know you when they know you're going through something? Oh, I'm sorry for this, or I'm sorry for that, or I understand what you're going through. When in actuality, people, you know, they compartmentalize things that they go through, and people put things in a certain level. Like they'll say, hey, you lost your puppy or your dog, right? This is the person who didn't have no children. They had this pet since its inception, right? And then they lost it, and then they're grieving, and then a person would be sitting up here talking about, man, it's just a pet. Why would you grieve over it? It ain't like it was a child. But to this person, it was the closest thing to what they had to take care of. It gave them a sense of responsibility. It gave them companionship. It gave them someone to talk to. Yeah. And really just in a sense of I'm talking and they're listening, because they're not going to talk back. They won't interrupt your thoughts, right?
Yeah.
What you say?
I would say it's like a good friend, right? Somebody who it's their, you know, and that's this very special relationship between.
Exactly. But you have to allow that person to grieve when they've lost that particular type of relationship. Now, on the other hand, yes, the person has lost the life of a child. That's just up there too, but it's up there to the person that is experienced having a child. If a person haven't experienced having a child, but they lost a pet and that is their experience, then the grief would seem like, you know, it will level out. If a person would take a moment to not try to make it seem like what you're going through is worse than the other person.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that.
You get what I'm saying?
And there's so much of that.
Everywhere. In all things, you got people who are really not appreciative of what is in front of them and what their life is really entailed of. They are so busy trying to compare to what other things are going on. So you won't be able to grieve the way you want to, because, or you can't really get the support you want to, because then now it's a person over here saying, oh my God, you lost this, well, I lost that, and I lost this. And it's like, yeah. Well, hold on for a second. Like, empathy is the one thing that we're lacking most in all of the communities, right? You know, people will give you a little bit of sympathy here and there because people like to see you down and them up. Let's be honest, you know.
Well, people, glad people I'm not kinda, there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that's not me, right? And people keep on moving about their business, but they so glad that it's not them. But at the end of the day, whenever people don't stop and say, instead of saying, I'm glad that's not me, instead of saying, dang, you know, I'm sorry that happened to them. Mm. I hate that happened to them. Now, see, that's empathy.
Yeah.
You know, that's transferable. That's energy that you put out in the atmosphere to these people. And that's transferable. That whole thing, oh, I'm glad it ain't me. Who does that go to? That don't go to nobody. It don't go to the person who you now know their business. And it doesn't come back for a protection layer over you either.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just a what I'm glad. It's like, oh, I could give you something to not be glad about. The universe is easily can answer you if that's the if that's what you want to put out there. Oh, mm-hmm. We could give you something to, you know, feel bad about.
Right. We don't want to bring that in.
You don't want to bring that in. So right?
True. We compare, because especially in the grief world, I see it all the time. Because for a while I was in a lot of grief groups on like Facebook when I first lost my parents. And I was like, and I couldn't, like someone would say, oh, I lost this person. The person would be like, well, that's nothing. You know, it would be like, but that, you know, you don't even know what it's like. And I'm like, where does this, two people who have lost two people that are important to them are now like arguing over, but what's worse? And it's just like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You feel this, you feel this. It's just how it goes. You know, but it's so, and it's like people trying to compare on all sides, past, present, future, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And that's the thing. That's what keeps us divided. It's always some type of mechanism to keep people separated. And, you know, and ego has allowed everyone to be in a position where they feel like, you know, they either are better than or worse than someone else. Because even the people that walk around talking about how bad their life is, they always feel like their life is worse than everybody else's. You can't even get a conversation in, even when it comes to that. There's always somebody who feel like they're going.
The more people are divided, it almost goes back to your piece, what you were saying earlier about the elections. The more that people are divided and angry at each other, the more shit they pass through underneath everyone's noses. You know, it's like, it's that, you know, circus. It's like whenever there's something up, like whenever there's something going on, I'm like, what's happening behind the scenes? What all bills are being passed? Like, what's happening? Something. Who went where? Like, but it's the same, like the more, right?
Every time, you know, and that's the part that is just like still happening to this day. Like people still are emotionally triggered. I talk about that a lot. Like, you know, people have learned how to control the masses of people based through their emotions. You know, it's a spiritual thing. That's why when they say the battle is not against flesh and blood, but about spiritual, about wickedness and principalities and high places, you got to really think about that. That's all spiritual. Like, the person can actually sit up there from somewhere else and say, this is what we can do to control the emotion of another person. That's how you feel on the inside. That makes you act however you do on the outside, right? And people have really figured out how to do that. They've said that, yo, this is all we got to say, and this will happen. We'll send these people to do this. This will trigger them on this end. Now, while they're over there rallying and doing this and getting in that particular situation, we're going to come in on this side over here in this place, and then we're going to put this together too, because they're not paying attention. They're all distracted by this thing over here. Yeah. And they've been able to use race as one of the main things. And now racism has been tied to everything. Transgenderism, the LGBT question, all the letters and stuff. And now they're trying to pass a bill where, you know, pedophilia is accepted. Now they're trying to say that that is a sexual preference. And that is being passed underneath while people are arguing about all of these other things, you know? Like, you got to really understand. Like, that's why I tell people all the time, like, what you're not paying attention to is the same things that always happen. There are things setting up for people to be sacrificed. And I don't mean that in the biblical sense, you know, and all that. I mean that in the sense of you're going to be used for me so I can do what I need to do over here. And you're going to always allow me to use you because you're not in control of your emotions. Can you imagine that?
I mean, it's just... And it's happening all over the place. And I, you know what? I always feel like this is my, I've cheated. Like, one of my answers is, okay, because I can go deep into conspiracy theories. I can go deep. I've been there my whole life. Like, I'm a super holistic person who's been, I mean, I've been unschooling. Like, I'm unvaccinated from the time I was born. Like, you know, that's just who I am. And so I've been in that world of conspiracies for quite some time. And it can drive you mad, especially when they keep coming true. It can drive you like absolutely mad. And one of the things I do is I'm like, okay, just protect my energy. And I go into my spirituality and I go into, okay, at least if I can, you know, hold on to my heart, my soul, like, and here and keep this clean, then I'm going to be okay. Right. And if I can teach my kids how to do that, then I'm going to be okay. You know, that's one of the places I go. The other thing I think about all the time is there are so many of us in this country, right? And if we just all refuse to vote and refuse to pay our taxes, what the fuck could they do? You know, if they would have nothing to work with, but there's no way. Like, they've worked, they've got their tendrils in so deep that, like, I can't even get my neighbor to be like, hey, just let's not, you know,
That would be the power of people actually working together. And let's think about it. Why are we even paying taxes anyway when they print money? Why?
And like, it's just you gotta think value. About
it. They print it anyway. So taking our money, it's all like, it's all a scam anyway, right? But we fall for it each and every day because we say, you know, for the most part, they are the ones who keep everybody separate, the ones who work together. Like you said, that could be for anything. Just think about major corporations. There are Fortune 500 companies right now that most people work for that report their earnings at certain times of the year, and they be in profit, and they be in certain amount of profit, and it shows what the CEO gets. Yet, whenever the cost of this goes up and this goes up and all these other things, but it doesn't pass down to the people who actually, you know, help the company to be in profit.
Right.
It seemed like all the people who worked at the company said, hey, yo, listen, fam, like, you know, you need to pass some of that down. We're not begging. We saying match. We got to live. Like, match. If that don't happen, then we going over here. And then what they got to do? Most people will be threatened that they're going to lose their job. And then think about how much it costs just to train an employee. Now, what we found out, like, because most people won't do research, for a Fortune 500 company to just train one employee throughout the time that you go through the training, it's like two salaries. Whatever your salary is, double that.
Really?
Just to train you.
Just to train someone. Wow. I didn't know that.
So just to train you. Yeah, there are people that come into different companies just to train them on the process. And then, you know, for most companies, they're going to give you, what, like a 90-day window before anything that you do get held against you, but that's still your probationary period. Within that time, you're going to get a certain amount of training. It just depends on the job, but for the most part, yeah, they use that little 90-day window to use that as that thing. So can you imagine how much it costs them, you know, just to train?
Yeah.
To get it right, to be in compliance. Like, it costs a lot. They can't afford. I ain't saying they can't afford it. But I'm saying, like, who would want to go through that headache and then hiring people? Right. Yeah. Because now you gotta pay the person. Because if the person that do the interviews walk out too, right. So who gonna do the interviews?
Right.
So the company.
That's what I'm saying. If we got together, right? I mean, like, I think about it, like, and I think about, like, even the people that are close to me, and like, they trust people in these. Being elected for presidents and stuff and these people in Congress more than like someone who knows or has, you know, close to them who has a relationship with them. I mean, I can remember when COVID came around and they were pulling out the vaccines. I was like, don't take it. Don't take it. Don't take it. Don't take it. I know I did so much research and I'm like, don't take it. And all these people ended up taking it. And I was like, why are you trusting some random person who doesn't give a crap about you? Like, I'm here to, like, all of my family took it. I'm like, why are you doing this? You know, like, why do you, I don't understand. But they trust that entity more, mm-hmm. who, you know, turns because out has no one's health in mind, really.
I mean, you think about it, like, you know, controlling your emotions and fear. Because let's figure it out. Like, when you come down to, like, Akashic Records, right? Let's talk about that a little bit. Because in Akashic Records, from my understanding, is a record that's being kept of your whole lifespan. Not even just this one, but lives that you've lived before. This is your soul's journey. Yes. And for the most part, people are only thought to believe that human beings only existed about 6,000 years or so. But they keep coming back with all of these different remnants of saying, like, listen, y'all, it's going back a lot further than that. It's going back millions of years. We want to even debunk a lot of other things about places that were already over here that were considered major cities that people still can't repeat the architecture, like New York, like California, and like other places where it's like, yo, these buildings are massive. They were already here, and there's never been another one created like them. So people will always think that, you know, we just got here. But let's talk about Akashic Records for a lot of people who may not understand what that is. Can you break that down?
Yeah. So the Akashic Records are like a dimension of knowledge. Think of it as a dimension of knowledge, of pure knowledge. People access it through their clairabilities, through their senses, through meditation. Everyone has an Akashic Record. Every living being has an Akashic Record. Every living thing has an Akashic, like every blade of grass has an Akashic Record if it's living, right? So even the wood in my house that was once a tree has an Akashic Record because that tree was once living. So, and those knowledge as a human being, it starts when your soul was born. But you have to remember, you can't think of time in the Akashic Records like you would normally. Like, you can't think of it linearly. So we're that is a huge conditioning that is everywhere. Just for one day, notice how many things are around time being linear in your life. It's everywhere. It's a massive conditioning. But in the records, you have to think of it more of I was just doing an Insight Timer Live about automatic writing in time. And it was like, you got to think of it like a crystal ball or like a primordial soup that's all swirling together. Think of time like that. So like past, present, and future are all intertwined, right? It's all happening at the same time. And so, you know, when your soul is created, and every lifetime you've been through is there's a record of, including future lifetimes, including this present lifetime. There's records in your Akashic Records. And so you can go into your own records. It's just a fun fact. Within the last 100 years, we were just given the ability to go back into our own Akashic Records. The ability to go into our Akashic Records was taken away because when you go into, people were misusing the ability and going into other people's records, kings and queens, and that, you know, like dictator style stuff, going in and learning from someone else's soul knowledge without them knowing. So it was taken away from us for quite some time, and it was just given back in the last 100 years. So it's like everybody has access now to their own Akashic Records. And when you go in not to divine. You don't go in to be like, I'm going to marry someone. Am I going to marry someone in 2 years? It's not about that. It's about learning what your soul has already learned and integrating the knowledge and seeing where things are holding you back. So sometimes like in the Akashic Records, you'll find a lifetime that is still holding on in this lifetime. Like it's that time, you know, in your life, all of a sudden you feel pulled to someone, but you have no idea why. Maybe they treat you like shit, but you're like, you're like, oh, I don't know why I can't leave this person, right? And there's no reason. Sometimes we can find a reason, but sometimes there's no reason. Sometimes it's from like past lives and past contracts and stuff. So you can do that kind of work in the records. And it's recognized in the Bible. It talks about it in a few pieces in as a book of life. So if you read the Bible, the book of life is mentioned in the Bible, which are the Akashic Records.
Gotcha. And so, and the book of life is what they talk about. It's the opposite of what the book of the dead is, right? Am I correct about that?
I am not really, I don't know enough about the book of the dead, book of life. I just know it's mentioned in there as the Akashic Records. And a lot of religions mention it. Book of the dead, the Tibetan book of the dead. Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, no, they do have one. I know they have that one. right? But then they have the, I guess the one that would be considered more in the realm of what Kemet was, Egypt, and, you know, that whole area, you know, that particular one, that Imhotep was particularly the one that used, and being that he was the master of medicine, father of medicine, and all that other stuff, because, you know, of course, all medicine come out of Egypt because everybody went there to learn it. The first surgeon went there to learn it from him, right? So let's just say, like, he was the one that was responsible for putting that one together, because the Book of the Dead is really about life, and then the Book of Life is really about what happened in the past and the dead and things that already happened, which is just a tie to what you're saying about the Akashic records, because a record is a keep of something. Like, if we kind of break down what a record is, now there are things, like you said, when it comes to the Akashic records, your future is in them records as well too. Other lifetimes are in them records as well too. But the only thing that we can access, if I'm not mistaken, and you, that's why you're the expert and you're going to help us with this, is that we can only experience or go into our past records of where we've been. Is that
you can go into future records, because remember I said time is like this,
right?
So time is happening at the same time, so you can access future lives too.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it's just that you can't divine, because everything's happening all at once. Right. So it's like you can't divide. So you can't go into a future thing to figure out, oh, that's the job I'm going to get. Right. Like that. Because it all changes as we move and shift and write in our records. But yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, that you mentioned Egypt, too, because that's like where all the mystery schools, you know, they talk about the spiritual mystery schools are all from like the beginnings of Egypt, and such a magical place.
Well, yeah, and if you kind of think about just in general, like just where we are now, just in North America and all these other things, there's so much stuff that they're finding that is just the remnants of what would be considered Egypt, to the point where they're trying to figure, like, well, look, how could this be over here? Right? Like, and there's so much going on, and there's so much that's being kept from the people, that I think that when you talk about Akashic records, for those people that want to access it. So I think we're going to get into that in a minute. I'm going to make this point, though, but I do want to get into, you know, how can people access it? And if they cannot on their own, what are some of the things that they can use to help, right? But that's one. But so before we do that, I want to say, you know, when it comes down to people and spirituality, it's still a taboo on things that they don't know about, right? Because for a lot of people, they grow up in religion. You know, for most of us, we grow up in some type of religion-based faith that doesn't really teach us about spirituality, because spirituality is the foundation of religion. Religion is just a doctrine used to control your spirit. Well, I mean, if you kind of think about it, it's the doctrination that they use to control your spirit. And so if we kind of put ourselves in a position to say, okay, if they work so hard to control it, what can our spirit do? But there are very few people who have that type of curiosity, right? Because that comes with imagination. You know, we've lost our sense of imagination once we started realizing that there's a such thing as a bill, a four-letter word.
Listen to me. It started way before that. It started in kindergarten. When they told you, here's a handprint, make a turkey. That's when it started. It started like,
all right. Hey, look, and for some people, they was able to make that turkey, right? Or make it look like one. But that's the thing. You had the imagination, but your parents, though, had to be like, oh my God, that is the greatest turkey I've ever seen. Because if not, the person would have never became maybe one of the greatest artists that ever lived. Imagine for some of these people who are amazing at what they do, if their parents told them that they sucked at it when they really did. Most of us, we don't be taught self-esteem as in our households, because we think that we're creating a bunch of arrogant people, when no, we're trying to make people, build people with a self-esteem that makes them feel like, yes, they can do that. Why would we tell them what they can't do and then go out there and let them find somebody that will tell them what they do? How many people we know, like a lot of kids I know in my community, they had both of their parents. Their parents always gave them what they want, but their parents never gave them any validation. So the people that gave them the validation of who they felt like they were as a person is who they gravitated to. And unfortunately, it wound up being in negative situations.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is having been an Express for a therapist for a long time, one of my favorite things I learned in school, they had done this study. I don't know if it's Finland or Norway or Sweden. I'm not sure which one it was, but they had done a study on childhood development. And it's so backwards from what we do in our education system. So like for like kindergarten, it should be absolutely like free and experimenting, right? So like an example of what you should do with a kindergarten kid for art would be to like go into a white room, put a bunch of like paintbrushes and paint and let the kids go to town with their hands, with their feet, with their hair, with whatever, right? Just like experiment and feel and express in all different ways, right? Just to like be given everything, not line, no in the lines. That would be the opposite of what they're developmentally ready for, right? And then when you move into like that 8 to 10, you know, even up to before high school, like you're talking elementary and middle school, right? We learn physically, right? We learn physically. We should be up. Actually, Montessori school has it right with this because I used to work for a Montessori school as an artist. And they used to teach history through theater. So they would like redo battlefields and stuff and teach everything that way. But that's the way to do it, is to get up and be active, to teach math by actually getting up and doing it literally with your body. Yeah. Like that kind of thing. But what do we do in elementary and middle school? We stick them in desks, take away recess, and we just have 1 hour of gym or not even, right? So, and that's the way we were meant to developmentally learn at that age. And the kicker of this is high school. This is the kicker. We are set up to developmentally as teenagers. We are not meant to learn a book thing at all. In teenagers, like if we were to teach teenagers to their developmental stage, it would be, let's learn about how you feel about things. Let's see how you fit in with your own culture, or your own family. It would be about what do I feel like? What am I in relationship? And then what am I in relationship to a larger community? And then it would be like community projects. So they actually did a school like this, and it would be no book learning whatsoever. What do we do to high schoolers? We give them AP classes, right? Like that's what they do. And they sit and they work a lot. But when they did this experiment, the kids who went through doing the school exactly to their developmental needs, they had not a single academic class in high school, okay? What they did when they graduated high school, they went to a community college. And in 1 year, they learned everything that a typical teenager would have learned in 4 years, in 1 year, because they knew who they were. They knew who they were in relationship. They knew who they were. They knew who they wanted to be. They understood. They had the option. They had the opportunity to give and give back into their community. Like they knew so much, and they were off and in massive colleges within a year. And it was like this small group that was taken through this developmental process, but they became critical thinking, beautiful individuals that learned everything that a high school could give them in less than a year. Like, stop. Like,
no, that's amazing.
Like, that was the most amazing thing I learned in school. So, like, when you talk about, it's not even, it's like we cut them off very, very young from how we're supposed to learn and what we're supposed to be doing. You know, even think about kindergarten and first grade. It's all about you learning your alphabet and reading. It's not supposed to be about reading. You know, it's supposed to be, I have a 7-year-old going on 8. She's just learning to read. She's picking it up like that. Because, and it's like, I don't really have to do very much. It takes her, like yesterday, she read 84 words in like 3 minutes. Like, so, you know, but it's because she has been experimenting and exploring up until now, doing whatever she wants to do to express it. But what we do in schools is we start to place them in these places where, you do need to be told you're doing good, even though you just did a handprint, right? I bet you if you didn't ask that kid to do a handprint, you just let him do turkey, whatever they wanted to do, it would have been awesome. It'd be awesome.
Probably, right? Yeah.
But we put them in a situation where they need that. They need that to survive. You know, they don't know that it's just good because their turkey print looks like everyone else's turkey print because there's not much you can do with it, right?
That's true.
Like you can do a little bit, but it looks like everybody else's. And you want to talk about bills and being, you know, taught in the education system how to be a worker. That's what it is. Exactly. We learn how to be a worker and how to stay low. And how to not think and how to not, you know, you'd say you think in other ways, but we're not taught to be individuals. You know, I don't know how I got on that tangent, but I just said that was like the best thing I learned in college.
Well, no, because it makes sense, because I had a guest on who was like clinically diagnosed with a learning disability, right? And to the point where she said she was getting like W's on her report card. I didn't even know that you could go down that low in a grade. Like, I didn't even know they'd go that low.
I would be like, right? When?
After the W, there's only a couple more left. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Only like three more left. So like, yo, but the fact that she was saying, yeah, I got a W on my report card one day. But I didn't want to ask her why we was on, because I didn't want it to seem like I was like, yo, wow, what is it? You know, but the fact of the matter is I was saying, well, dad, yo, she said, but she loves flowers, loves to grow them, loves to, you know, loves to do all these different things, right? So I was just saying, like, yo, you know what happens in traditional schools? They get caught up in, you know, trying to learn like each children the same way that other people learn just because they're the same age. When that's not how it is. Sometimes you got to find what a child loves and teach them through that. If you could find out what they love, you could teach them how to count. You could teach them how to read. You could teach them how to, you know, you could teach them how to problem solve, all based on what they love, because everything is based on numbers. I don't care if it's music they love. I don't care if it's basketball they love. How many jump shots you going to shoot? You got to count them. How many you get if you go to the foul line? You got to count it. So it doesn't matter. Like, so and when people can find them, you could teach them in what they love, not teach them in how you learn, teach them in how your child's personality is. But then you got parents who are not allowed to get to learn their children's personality, because as soon as they have the children, as soon as it's time, they're in the daycare. And while the parent is at
they're
work.
Working, right? Because they have
and
to
then
work.
When they come home, they just have a regular routine and a schedule to get them ready for work and their child ready for daycare again. So they don't really get a chance. They learn their children, but you don't learn your child's personality of how they would love, what would be better for them to learn. Because like I said, that four-letter word, Bill.
It's true.
Puts
it does
in
start.
A position where they have to look, I gotta do this. I can't focus on my kids. I gotta give my kids to somebody else to focus on while I focus on this. It's like delegation, right? When it's time for us to delegate, we won't. We want to be on the island. We do it all ourselves. But then when we need to take care of things and handle it ourselves, we want to delegate. And that's where the balance is in balance. So I always talk about entrepreneurship, not that everybody needs to be somebody's boss, but everybody needs to have multiple streams of income, right? Mm-hmm. Having one is too close to having none. And that's just for you to have that's just practical purpose. That's not for you to feel like you want to be the next Bill Gates. It's just to say you want to have the next pay your bills
just
so you
case.
Can walk through the gate, right?
Your
gate won't get locked. All right. So what I want to do is I want to get those questions answered about Akashic Records, because that we can go off, but we can always come back. Right. So look, let's do this. How can people access their Akashic Records? Because first of all, before you answer that, the people that's watching right now, if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure y'all like and subscribe and all that. If you have never heard of Akashic Records, that is the record of your soul, like how many lifetimes your soul lived. And like Jocelyn said, even this, what your soul will live going forward. And not just this timeline or this lifetime. It's like you have future lives, like you have future past, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of things, we get free will. So what you may think you'll do tomorrow can change, because you can change your mind today. So, but there's things that you've already gone through. Now, we always want to think about wisdom in a way that most people don't ask for wisdom. Most people ask for money. If a person was to ask for what they would need in life, they would get the wisdom. The wisdom would get you to actually whatever you need to get to the money. Most people would ask for money instead of wisdom. So what happens when it comes down to wisdom, right? Wisdom will give you the foresight to be able to kind of project what kind of life you want to live. So that's why it's always good to know where you've been, to know where you're going, so to speak. Yeah. So I'm going to say to you, if you can, let's see. We have a comment real quick before we get to the question. The comment is, or when a child goes to the doctor is quick to diagnose a child with a condition instead of the parent and provider trying to better understand their learning language. Exactly. Yeah. Because we have not created that verbiage that there is a such thing as a learning language. We have a love language, love languages, that most people, you know, set up their relationships based off of. But they don't even think about learning language. That's a really good way to put that. There is a such thing as a learning language. Your child, the only, but that's what comes with spending time with your child.
Yeah. Even when I was a kid, because my parents were super holistic and stuff. And when I remember I was just telling my husband the other day, I was saying, well, I had to take these tests my mom gave me on how I learn. Like, do I learn by hearing, by seeing, by doing? Like, I had to take these tests when I was really young. And right. I remember my mother knew. So she knew I was going to just fail every test because I hated tests and especially like standardized tests. Like, I couldn't just read something and be able to take it in. I needed to hear it often, right. You know, and I needed to see things in a different way. So, you know, and you can't doodle on those standardized tests. Like, I'm a total doodler while I try to put my mind together. So right. Like, she knew really, really soon that I wasn't that, I guess that's kind of like 70s education or something. Maybe I feel like
but think about your doodling. You're a whole artist though. I see the paintings behind you. It wasn't necessarily doodling. It was more so like, this is how you will learn, because imagine if they taught you that same thing by using paint, by using what to put together, or how to use these different brushes, or what's the size of the brushes, what's the inches of the brushes. Like, all of these things could have helped, because that's geometry, that's chemistry, all of those things, because right. You got to mix certain colors to get colors. Like, all of these things are ways that it's just learning your child instead of them putting you in a space saying, yo, she's a doodler. It's like, no, she's an artiste. Now let's figure out how to teach her through that pen. Like, we talk about pen as in the sense of a writing, right? Like, when you write music or you write books or you write poetry, you know. But I feel like anything that you use to be artistic is your pen, whether it's your mind, whatever. Yeah. I call that your pen. And I mean, just using it as a metaphor, right? So that's your pen. And is your pen game really strong? Like, how strong is your pen game? Because that's where it goes back into you believing in you. But that's the self-esteem thing that we don't get taught as children by our parents, because they are the people first that we want to impress. Young boys want to impress their mothers first. Young girls, they want to impress their dads. Young girls got their dads wrapped around their finger. Young boys pretty much want their dad, want to impress their dad, but they want their mom as a cheerleader. It's just how it goes. You know what I'm saying? We want mommy to be the one to be like, yay! And we want dad to be one. Good job. That's what we want. Right? But we want mommy to be the one to say yay. Right. Because that's what we get our energy from. You know what I mean? So we don't get taught that self-esteem from our parents. And that's why I say, for the most part, just being able to give your child the energy of saying, yo, listen, that was a good job. It was terrible, but it was a good job. It was a good job because you took the energy to do it. Most people won't even try, son or daughter. So that's why your painting is dope. But we cannot put this up in front of nothing for nobody to see that's coming over here to the house. But this is an amazing photo, son. Keep doing it, right? Or daughter. But however you got to do it, you got to give them the real, but you got to encourage them at the same time, too. You got to find a way to have a balance, right? All right, so we got another comment, and it's saying, but I also blame the parents for accepting a diagnosis or labels being applied to their child instead of taking the time to learn and understand their child, which is true, because it goes back to people not really getting the opportunity to learn their child, because depending on the circumstances, whether it's a single parent household or a two parent household that has two incomes coming in, the child is going to be with somebody else for most of the day. You don't get a chance to learn your children like that. And it's sad, but yeah, you get to learn what they like to eat. You get to learn what they like to watch. You get to learn what you're telling them what to do, but you don't get to learn what their imagination do, because their imagination time is with other people. and it's being taught wherever it's being done. You're not a part of their imagination, Tom. Here's another comment. It's easy to think your child has a problem instead of thinking you need to be a better parent. Okay. So then you got that thing that you got to think about too as well. How can you be a better parent? Now, some people feel like the way they provide makes them an amazing parent. Yeah. You got some parents or some dads who are not allowed to see their children because of finances, not the fact that they're not a good person. You got a lot of things going on out here in the world with people who don't want to accept responsibility. That's why I feel like with the Akashic Records, if people would spiritually figure themselves out, it would help them hold a little bit more accountability for themselves too as well. Because, hey, knowing that maybe in the past life, the reason why you're like this or what's going on with you right now is because you quite still, this happened back then that quite never got taken care of, then now you can take care of it. Most people call it a generational curse. You could title
there
it.
There is a lot. There's a lot of ancestral healing in the Akashic Records. There's a lot of places. But even just talking about that fact that people don't want to be seen as a, or they don't want to deal with the fact that they need to be a better parent, right? This idea, I see that being in the holistic world and seeing parents with vaccine injured children and then how they're treated by other parents who don't believe vaccines cause problems. And, you know, I know very many mothers who absolutely they're vaccine injured. You hear their stories. There's no other explanation. And, you know, it comes down to the fact that people who fight so hard against this being a possibility, it's because they vaccinated their kids. That means they put their kids in danger. They did it to their own child, and they have to come to terms with that. And the sooner you come to terms, the sooner you get to understand, like, there's options now, right? Like, to
that you can do. It's just, it's going to take you to be brave enough to understand that everything that we have, that we need to heal ourselves is already here on Earth. It's been a part of the Earth, and we're a part of it. And I don't think people believe in God as much as they say they do. We got a bunch of people that go to church, but you don't believe in God if you don't believe in the things that he gave you to heal yourself. Now, most of these people have given these children these vaccinations with trust, with full trust. And now that's what I don't get. I don't get how you don't trust the person that you see every day, that you're around every day, but you trust a person you have never seen to tell you what's good for you.
Well, here's a whole new level of it. People who are going to church, right? And you, like, you kind of said this before about religion and church, like religion versus spirituality, right? You kind of talked about that. And it's true, like, one, they're very different, but yet they're like, one just takes advantage almost of the other. I loved how you said it earlier. It was perfect. But how do people trust? So people who have trusted their church, or, you know, say it's Catholicism or whatever, just, I grew up with Catholicism. Right. So I'll say that. And even like, look at the COVID time, you know, you trust this church. And then for, you know, many, the church says, oh, it's not okay to have human DNA in a vaccine. So they don't have to take the human DNA vaccines, right? Like, you don't have to take any of those vaccines. But then COVID comes out, which has DNA, and yet all of a sudden it's okay. So how do you trust? Like, how, I don't understand why more people didn't question that. Like, I don't understand why more Christians didn't question that. And that comes down to like a place of like, okay, who am I trusting? I'm just going to trust this guy in the Vatican? Like,
I mean, but then
who is this guy? You know,
they always trust people. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, people really have, because of the story of Jesus, right? Because of the image that Jesus is, you know, the thought of a savior. People feel like somebody else is going to come and save them. You know, it's easier to put the blame on somebody else. It's easy to put whatever you don't need to pull up because this other person has pulled up for you. There are people who are committing sins each and every day, but because their religion allows them to come confess, they'll do that and come back outside again and act like they never did it before. There are people who are in, that's right now, that are part of different things, and children are being trafficked right now. And these are some of the nicest people you ever meet in this world. And they're doing some of the most heinous things behind closed doors to other people. And these are the people who hide behind things that they feel like gives them a better image. And religion always gives people an image. See, spirituality gives you an alarm. It don't give you an image. It gives you an alarm. See, spirituality allows you to walk in a room and pick up on the energy that's in there. See, spirituality allows you to go by context clues. So when people say certain things out your mouth, it'll ring that little thing off inside of you that'll help you to know when you need to go left. So see, most people don't understand that. You know, that's where spirituality comes in that. So if you could balance religion with spirituality, because religion, like I said, is the, you know, mistreatment of spirituality. It's the control of it. That's what religion is. It's just controlling your spirituality. Because if they could say, yo, you need to count on somebody else for everything that goes on with you, what you gonna do for the rest of your life? Count on somebody else. Count on the medical people. Count on your doctor. Count on this. Count on that. Why? Because you've been indoctrinated throughout your life that everything that comes for you is from someone else. All you have to do is pay this percentage. As long as you pay this percentage, everything else that you're going to get in life is going to come from somewhere else. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to do any of those things. All you have to do is give this amount of money and everything else is going to come to you. Matter of fact, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to do this for you. You vote for me. Listen, you put that man out the house, I'm going to give you food stamps. I'm going to give you a voucher that's going to cover your housing. And you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to put you on Medicaid. You know what I'm going to do? This man going to pay child support. I'm going to take his money out of his child support and pay for that Medicaid that I'm going to give you. And he's still going to have to pay child support. And I'm going to make him get health insurance too as well. You know, these are the things that they allow to use. And it's just one example that I'm giving. But it's way more out here that's been used against people because the spirituality has been dead. Why? Because we're not connected to nature. Nature is the closest thing to spirituality. We were more closer back to paying attention to nature. We can better align our spirituality because that is always going to be constant, right? But before we do, because I want to make sure we get the answer, how can people...
That's funny. We'll get there. So the Akashic Records, everyone has access to their own. They really
How can they access their own? Is there any particular practices that people should do, people they should seek, or tools that they can use to help them make sure that they're accessing their Akashic Records and not just putting thoughts in their mind?
So the first thing you have to do if you want to start going into your own Akashic Records is find some balance in the body. You have to clear your channel, right? You have to clear your channel. You've got to like be able to be still and quiet in yourself. You have to be able to have a balance of your nervous system. So people balance their nervous systems in different ways. They breathe. Like my favorite is the physiological sigh. It's like two gentle sips in through the nose. Open the mouth and sigh it out. It's actually scientifically proven to balance the nervous system. There's been a lot of studies on that breath. So you could do that like 9, 18, 27 times. So that's a great way to balance the nervous system. Or even just like mindfulness techniques, like looking around, noticing three things that are red, five things that are blue, two things that are round. Just being aware of your present like space, breathing into your body, feeling the expansion and the contraction so that you become really present in your body, because your body is the channel into the Akashic Records. So you have to be able to be clear here first. If you don't have a great meditation practice, like start with breath. And then once you get, I like also yoga nidras. Like I said earlier, I'm on Insight Timer. Like I have a bunch of free yoga nidras on Insight Timer and breath work and like as part of my thing there. So you can, there's also my teacher is Ali Boothroyd. Check her out on YouTube. Like amazing. Like there's lots of beautiful free yoga nidras. They're effortless practice. Lay down, pillows under your knees, pillows under your head, and just close your eyes. You fall asleep half the time when you're doing it. It's awesome. But so something just to balance your nervous system, to get really present, to understand and know and be with your body. That's the first thing you have to do. And then once you feel like you have that relationship, going into the records, going to the first, like when you first go into the records, you go into meditation. I always do like a banishing, because that's how I was taught with mantras to banish. You only want to work with the highest most aligned energy with you, the high, right? You want to work with the highest energy when you're in your soul's knowledge. Because we have lots of, you know, entities and spirits and guides and guardians and ancestors that work with us. But we might have that uncle that died, you know, a while ago that's working on helping us get a job. We don't necessarily want him in our soul. We want his help because he's really good at that, but we don't need him in our Akashic records, you know. So I always just call in the highest, most, you know, most healthiest for me in this moment, right? People to work with. So I will do that first, and then you can close your eyes and just breathe into the darkness for a minute, and then ask a guide to come, like one of your guides, and then ask them to bring you to your Akashic records. That's how people generally are brought into their Akashic records. And there are meditations where people bring you into a library, but my experience is that not everyone's Akashic records are a library. Mine were not a library. And so when I was first, well, like not the first time I went in, but the second or third time I went in through someone else's meditation, I was looking for a library and I passed right by my Akashic records because I'm like, oh, that can't be it. It's not a library. That's not it. Like, and a lot of people walk you into a library, which it doesn't have to be. So asking a guide to bring you there and then just saying yes. So we're so very used to being careful of things, not being, you know, if you're going to go into your records, like literally set aside time, put like 20 minutes on the timer and be like, I'm going to say yes to everything right now. What is it going to hurt? It's not going to hurt. You banished. You're working in your highest and greatest good. You're working with a guide that you trust, right? Just say yes for 20 minutes. And see what happens. Like, even if you're like, well, you know, all of a sudden you see like a white room where you feel a chill and you're like, oh, I should turn to the right and like whatever, just say yes to it. Because as you say yes to it and you keep trusting it, you'll find yourself in your records. And in your records, your first time, just be there. It's a space. It's a dimension of knowledge. You're using your clairabilities in there. So you might see things. You might hear things. You might feel things. You might get empathetic, like feel things like sensations on your body, or you might feel things like emotions. My first time in the records, when I first came, I ended up in a past life when I first went there. And I ended up like, when I came out of it, and I was awake the whole time, but I was like living in a lucid past life. I was drenched in tears. I didn't even know I was crying. Like, I was drenched in tears from it. So depending on what your clairabilities are or your ability to access, you know, through our senses, if you think of our body as a conduit of the spirit world and the earth world, all our senses are our tools and our instruments. So getting present in that, walking yourself in through the meditation, asking a guide to bring you there, being open to whatever you see. It doesn't have to be a library. It doesn't have to be a door. It doesn't have to be, you know, your guide can bring you there. And if you're like, I've never met a guide, I've never been in a guide, then your first thing to do is meditate, like clear your channel, get like in a place where you're calm, collected, feel, you know, clear in yourself, and just without going into your records, start to try to connect with a guide first. Yeah.
That makes sense, because what I want people to get is that, you know, what she's saying, I know for a lot of people, they may be thinking like, oh man, this sounds mystical or all this other stuff. But let me be honest with you. A lot of what she's saying is really true. And you do have the ability to do these things. And ancestors and gods are there, especially those that have ascended. There are certain souls and people in your lineage that have not came back through after they've ascended. Now, there are a different level of spirituality as well, too. But I want y'all to get this in mind. If you ever saw the movie Black Panther, whenever they went into that place where it was just orange everywhere and their elder came and showed up that was no longer there and had the conversation with them, they put these things in movies because these things come from written records. These things are not imagining, right? They don't imagine nothing in Hollywood. Everything that is out there is something that they got from somewhere. There is no imagination there, right? Because if not, it wouldn't be 32 Halloweens. Like, there's no way that this guy can still be alive if they had imagination. Because the rest of us know there's no damn way that it should be a 13th Halloween that's getting ready to come out. But hey, who am I, right? Look, what I will say is that in that particular scene in this movie, and there's other movies too that they've done that, where you'll see a person go into their mind but be talking to a person that they recognize who is no longer here but is their elder at the time, that gives them the wisdom of what they should do in the presence of where they are right now. So what she's saying is, I just wanted to give y'all that correlation so you would not look at it as if what she's saying is, oh my God, I got to sit down for 20 minutes and meditate and clear my mind. Like, yes.
Yeah.
But if you take the time to do these things, and yes, you can experience a certain level of thing. There are people out here who use other tools to do it, like mushrooms, hallucinogenics. Like, they are, it's a purpose to them, though. Don't get it twisted. It's not a drug. It is a purpose to using it, because it helps people who have never, ever put themselves in a position where they sat down for 20 minutes and did anything. Still. their life not set up that way, right? So, you know, some people do things like ayahuasca, right? I know if some of you never heard of that, I think that's something that comes from, you know, I think it's a plant and a frog. It's a lot of other different things that go on. But DMT, I heard a lot of people think about that. They created a whole movie about that. If I'm not mistaken, I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's the girl who plays in Avengers as Scarlet, if I'm not mistaken. And she is a DMT trafficker. And what happens is, through one of her trafficking things, all of the bags of DMT bust in her system and get in her system. And actually what it was getting the DMT was from the placenta of women when they have these children. I know a lot of y'all don't know about that either. They put a lot of things in movies that they do to entertain y'all, but it'd be real, right? So
like,
when
gets
she
you ready,
that,
right?
You get what I'm saying? So
yeah,
when
like
she overdosed when she overdosed on DMT, it allowed her to have these abilities where she can just do all kind of stuff that normal people would consider her being a superhero. She could change the color of her hair. She could change the color of her eyes, skin color, whatever she wanted to do. And it allowed her to access an Akashic record where she was able to go back to where she... Oh, it's called Lucy. The movie Lucy. Okay. Because it took her back to that primate that they said that people came from. But that is crazy, because if you kind of think about the whole Anunnaki thing and everything that came on with that, we would know that, yeah, they didn't do that to do that. But they did put some things together. That's not the podcast for that. Or the show. It's the podcast for it, but not the show. So we ain't going to get into that right now. But this is what we want to do, because I'm glad that she was able to do that, because what we wanted to do is make sure that, you know, for those of y'all that are watching and those of y'all that's going to watch the playback, we want to make sure that y'all understood that there is a certain thing as it being able to balance your body and your spirit. And it's so great to have people that come on who's not afraid to talk about that spiritual portion of your what the balance is. And although tonight we did talk about a lot of other things, you got to think about it. She's an educator and she has children. So, you know, talking about things that deals with children is always going to put us in a real conversation. And that's why I love this platform, because it's not set up as a niche, and we can have honest and open conversation, even if it's a little bit off topic. But the point is that everything that's said is meant to be said. That's why when you allow the spirit to flow, your life works out so much better than trying to control the spirit. I mean, that's what goes on in life. We're too busy trying to control the flow. And we got to let the flow flow. That's the meaning of the flow. It got to flow. You can't control it all the time. Let it flow. And I bet you'll feel a whole lot better. Imagine if the water was controlled. A lot of people would be musty every day if the water didn't flow. But look, so before we go...
I feel like it goes back to nature. Like you were talking, you brought it up a bunch of times. Like we just need to get back to nature. Like just that flow is in nature. The idea of like, whenever I think of mushrooms and like ayahuasca and shrooms and all this stuff, I think of the roots and the systems in the ground and how everything's in connection and communication. And like when I think of rivers and flowing, I think of how it all is in conversation with each other, you know, everything. Like So just going to say, it just all goes back to nature. And
it like, all goes back to nature. Yeah. Reflecting on nature. More people spend time outside paying attention to nature. Sometimes just paying attention to the fly, paying attention to, you know, whatever the bug is, paying attention to the rabbit that you see running around, pay attention to, you know, the different type of grass, pay attention. Like if you just take some time and pay attention, I've seen a guy, I don't know if this is true because I don't have a microscope myself, but I'm getting one and I will. But they said that they put blades of grass under the microscope and they actually saw smiley faces. Now, that could be something that, you know, people said that it's just something that they see, but it also goes to say about how they say about us grounding, how we don't go outside and we don't touch the grass. We don't connect with the earth anymore as being, you know, beings that walk around in this flesh. We don't connect. And a lot of times they say that if we would just connect with the earth by standing in the grass barefooted, it will put so many positive ions in your body that you would be able to, like, at least be able to get certain type of information. You know how many people out here can tell what the weather is going to be just by the way that things are in the atmosphere from the way that they feel? You ever heard of a person who is saying they had a major injury and they can always tell when the pressure is changing because their body start aching where the injury was, and then here comes a storm or something like that? But can you ever imagine that that intuition has always been there? It's only been heightened because now you have a concentration on something. Imagine if we use that concentration on spirituality.
So, I mean, just to back off of that, like, and just to bring it back to the Akashic Records for a minute, you know, that idea of clearing the channel. And I talked about the body, the conduit of spirit and earth, right? We experience earth and nature through our body, and our body is how we read through into the records. So think of yourself as the conduit there. So if you're really interested in moving into like doing some of that work, when like 5 minutes a day, choose a sense and go with the intention of experiencing the world around you. Go into the woods, go on a street, go on wherever you want to go, a park, to a lake, and just focus with the intention for 5 minutes on a sense. Everything, when you, like, say it's hearing, if you're going to sit down and listen in a space outside, how far can you hear the sound vibrations? What does it sound like? Where is it around your body? Like, can you close your eyes and just hear? What happens if you open your eyes and hear? And those are ways to just really be with nature, but use one sense at a time. Don't try to open up all your senses at once. And as you do that, you're building your clairabilities. You're strengthening your clairabilities, which are how you tap into the Akashic Records.
Oh no, that's smart. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what, go out there and just look, or go out there and just smell, go out there
intention.
And just, yeah, have intention. Yeah, that makes sense. So listen, all of y'all that's watching tonight, if you are interested in learning more about Akashic Records, if you're learning more about human design, if you want to learn more about these things, you definitely got to reach out to Jocelyn, because this is what she does. She has a whole lot of years of experience in this. And like you said, if you're dealing with grief, if you're still a person who is battling with grief in a way where, you know, it's not positive. Now, we understand that what happened to you may not be positive, but is there a way that you can still live life with joy, even though you know there's times that you may not be happy? Let's figure that out, because joy and happiness is not the same thing, you know. But to have joy in times where you may not be happy is the difference between a person having a heart attack and for people just having a better day the next day than they had the day that they was dealing with. That's the difference between the two. Now, I know it's extreme for people that's watching. I know, I get that. But imagine, most people have strokes and heart attacks based off of their emotions. Not based on the way they're thinking, based on all of these other things, more so than it has something to do with the way they eat and stuff like that. So let's just put that out there too. There's a lot of people who, because of the way they think and the stress levels, have caused themselves to check out a little early in their physical body. You know what I mean? Because they're not able to do that. If you're a person out here who wants to learn more about this, please, Jocelyn, let them know how they can reach you.
Yeah. I just have to say, what can I say? One more thing, because you're saying about the heart attack. A lot of people, and I just read this statistic that most people who end up in the ER, it's because they're dehydrated. And then I saw this thing about, what if God? Have you seen that meme or whatever going on? What if God was water? because he's everywhere and everything. We're made of water. Water is outside of us. The deserts have no water, but what grows there? It was just so fascinating. And then I was like, just thinking that when powdered, like most people go into the ER because they're dehydrated, that's what gets them there. So like having enough water, I've been really conscious about water lately. So just food for thought. You know, I'm still kind of feeling how I feel about that, but
I'm going to share
it for you.
Everything triggers it. It's cool. That's dope.
But you can, I'm on jocelynbates.net is my website. I'm on Insight Timer. I offer free tracks and talks, and I'm on there all the time. I do automatic writing talks, and I do writing through grief and working through grief talks there for free. So that's kind of how I give back. Insight Timer was like the place that saved me for quite some time when I had like almost panic attacks because my kids were going to like sick, right? Because I was worried. And so I do that. And then I also have a Substack where I talk specifically about grief and my work in soul art and how soul art has helped me through my grief journey, because I really was in a rough place for quite some time. And you know, I kind of talk about that, and it's okay, right, that you can be there. And then I'm on, you know, I'm on Instagram at Soul Sessions by Jocelyn, and Facebook. You can find me all over the place.
Yeah, makes sense, because I know, you know, there's a lot of people out here who are dealing with grief. You know, they don't necessarily need to talk to a counselor and stuff like that all the time, because a lot of times counselors don't necessarily go through what you're going through. They're just there to hear you. But then knowing that there's a person who's actually overcame and learned how to harness grief instead of it being a negative thing, also not being a controlling thing, that's another superpower that can be taught. And a lot of people, sometimes they don't know that they have these things. They just have to be kind of fine-tuned a little bit. And that's where, you know, talking to people like you will come in at. Because you also have a podcast too, don't you? Or am I?
Yeah, my husband was on. That's Ungovernable. My husband was
It's his podcast. Okay.
Well, it's me and him together, but that's ours, is Ungovernable.
Gotcha. So I wanted to make sure that was another thing, because I don't know exactly who, you know, what the things is that you guys talk about on there.
We talk spirituality and also like just being ungovernable in general. Like, how do we live an ungovernable life? How do you free yourself from the system? How do you free yourself financially? How do you free yourself from the education system? How do you free yourself from pharmaceutical? And we open it up to a lot of different places. So we talk anything we're kind of like no niche, but the niche is like ungovernable, as long as it's to get yourself out of the systems.
Oh yeah, that's fly. So that even opens it up for even more. So yes, so to those of you guys that are watching, please make sure that you reach out to Jocelyn if you have any of those questions about those type of things that we talked about tonight. Now, understand, a lot of you would just do good just to learn about things sometimes, right? Even if it's a way that you can try to figure it out to try to just understand yourself a lot better. I know for so many people out here, they feel like they know themselves like so well, but sometimes you don't really know yourself. Like, you really can know yourself. And the day that you stop learning is the day that you stop living, right? Every day we're supposed to be learning something. And what not more to learn than about yourself? Like, come on. That's the one person you can change. You can learn about everybody else all day. You can't change them at all, right? And so we have a couple comments. It was a great conversation and insight. Then we have, that's awesome, Jocelyn. Jocelyn, I love seeing a couple work together for the greater good and supporting one another. So I think that's dope. You know what I mean? So yeah, thank you so much though for coming on the platform tonight and sharing your expertise and just having we kind of got off a little bit. We talked about anything else. You know what I'm saying? But it made up for a great conversation as always, because that's the purpose of the platform, right? It's to have great conversations with great people. And you're very interesting, even down to your headphones. For the whole time, I was making sure that I didn't see cat ears up there or there was a cat behind you. So, So definitely thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story and you know, the things that you've gone through with the audience, you know, because, you know, the loss that you suffered and the way that you've been able to overcome and help other people, It's a superpower, and it's amazing. So thank you for being willing to share your story with the people of Sparking Conversation tonight. And I thank you so much for all the comments from everyone tonight. Thank y'all so much for joining in the conversation. It means a lot to engage with the conversation and let people know that, yeah, man, you know what I'm saying? What y'all talking about, it resonates. And we love that, you know? So thank y'all so much. Is there any last words you want to leave with the audience before we get out of here, Jocelyn?
No, thank you for, well, maybe, you know what? Just get curious. I feel like it all, the answer lies in getting curious and expressing yourself, getting creative, getting curious and creative. And creativity is a good conversation. You know, it's like that. That is what it is. You get curious. The conversation is creative, and you never know what sparks from there. So, that's kind of like my message these days. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. I appreciate your energy and everything that you brought tonight. And you know, also, you know, I saw that you were from Jersey, just like me. So I think that was dope too.
You know. Oh, are you from Jersey?
Yeah, I'm from East Orange, though. I'm from further north.
I'm in Morristown.
Yeah. But so again, to all of you guys that are watching, thank y'all so much. Remember, next week we'll have another amazing guest on, as we always do, and we'll keep the conversation going. You guys know that when the playback or when the clips drop, y'all know it'll be out there for you guys to get some of the most important takeaways from the show tonight. And there were a lot, and I want y'all to know, like, it's very amazing to have people that are willing to tell their story and to be vulnerable about it, right? Because we get judged so often by what people don't understand. So whenever you're brave enough to come up and tell your truth and be unapologetic about who you are and not being afraid to share that, that's amazing. That's also a superpower too. Like, I'm telling y'all, a lot of y'all got a lot of superpowers out here in the world. You just don't look at it that way. I'm telling you, glass half full. Change that mindset. I promise, if you'll look at it from that standpoint, glass half full, and you'll see things from a different perspective. Again, thank y'all. Until next week, don't forget, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. And until next week, it's your boy Ra1 signing off, and I'm going to say peace.